guest on this episode. Can you believe
it? There's so much space here now.
I know.
It's weird.
We get to get so much cozier to each other.
And I know. I take my pants off again. Mm-hmm. Without it being awkward, without it being awkward.
Right, I was going to say, the last two guests managed not to say a thing about us not having pants on, which...
They didn't say it, but I could tell.
Yeah, well...
It was with their eyes.
Well,
was...
Jefferson's eyes when he was playing the flute were all over our lower torsos, so...
Which I took as a compliment.
Yeah, I do, too. There's... Okay, so a true story. We go to a cat vet, or Erica takes the cat once a year for her checkup, and I
A vet that just works on cats, exclusively works on cats.
I will not endorse that sentence, but yes, I don't feel comfortable going because the few times I went, the same vet took care of our cat, and all he did was stare at my crotch the entire time, both times. Like, and I don't mean like, you know, like I've had guys hit on me many times. That's totally fine. But this is just
you
a
have?
Dude.
You really have?
Yeah, in New York, you're gay until proven straight.
No.
Right. Actor, waiter, you know? I mean, that's the all my gay friends are like, you're gay until proven straight. I told you, didn't I tell you? Like, I would get my ass grabbed and I'd get really excited and be like, a buddy who was a guy, and I'd be like, ah, and they're like, you know, whatever.
So these are like people that you knew. We're going on a little tangent here.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So.
Yeah, that's how I learned about gay years. Like how like the aging works in the eyes of the gay community.
Yeah. So let's. I just want to do a little bit of a dive into this.
All right.
So, describe when this would happen to you. Was this while you were working?
Yeah.
And this was something
and out of the bar after too.
That was done by coworkers.
Yes. Yep.
So, how did you feel about it? Did it bother you? Were you made uncomfortable by it?
Not really. So the thing about waiting tables is, especially in fine dining, it's very stressful.
Mm-hmm.
So you really like let your guard down and form bonds with the people around you, you know? And so when you form like a group of work friends at a restaurant, it's very different than like office friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like things that I think would probably be pretty inappropriate in an office party situation are... totally fucking the norm in like a going out after a stressful shift kind of thing.
Okay. Now this is, I'm trying to like sort of draw some lines and some differences here.
Yeah. That's...
Because was this like an all male group?
No.
All right.
No.
So there were women who were also maybe groped while working That was a kind of a line that was established there.
Yeah, well, you know, my gay friends weren't really into that.
Well,
what else is it?
Okay. you kind of see where I'm going here. I mean, I'm not trying to.
Nope. I really want you to say it.
All right. So, it seems to me that what you've described is a textbook sexual harassment situation.
Yep.
At the same time, though, you weren't really bothered by it.
Nope. I was very young, not very, very soon out of college.
Mm-hmm.
I had been in the theater department for 4 years, pretty much exclusively. Like, I had barely gotten out of the theater building in the 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I was used to changing with other people, like, when we're all doing stage dress costume changes, that kind of stuff. So, like, there was just certain... norms that I think I had in my head that I would find uncomfortable now, but I did not at that time.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm not saying it was right or wrong. I'm saying it was very much, I didn't know better, a little bit of I was used to it, a little bit of I didn't care.
Okay.
And that kind of mix.
Okay. And I think either one of us is saying that people should be okay with something like that happening.
They shouldn't, but it's that other kind of weird double standard that you don't talk about a lot, which I think is what you're trying to tiptoe around.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm not even trying to tell. I'm trying to like to get
it's hard.
Get a grasp on it, get a mental.
We're two cis white males talking about like, you know, gay guys groping straight guys, and it's a tough
and
topic
I feel like there would be, it doesn't really happen to me, for one thing. Unfortunately, no matter how much I've hoped,
desperation is a stinky cologne.
It's something that really hasn't happened to me, so I don't have that direct experience with it.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I would think that as a straight male, as a guy,
mm-hmm.
it would bother me less than if I were a woman, because
it's someone of the same gender.
It's less of a threat to me because I'm a guy. Because really, I've got the physicality about me.
That really depends on your level of homophobia.
Well,
because there are definitely men who would be far more appalled by that than if it was a woman doing that to them. Look.
Okay.
Hi, we are buddies in space. You are.
That's Michael Smith, and you are.
And Michael Carrasi. Thought we were going to talk about Stranger Things, too, but apparently we're going
to get to
deep.
It. We're going to get to it.
But no, so,
This is the topic right now. This is something that's going on. All these allegations, and I don't really doubt it.
I don't either. I don't doubt
that
are, single
are coming out. Women have this, I mean, they're not a monolithic group, obviously, but so a lot of women. I think because of the publicity of the Harvey Weinstein case, are being, I don't know if encouraged is the right word, but they've hit their limit.
They're
on
feeling,
pent up anger
they're feeling
and frustration.
Liberated enough to do it. So okay, so I have a couple of things to share on this.
All right.
So first, my mother-in-law was talking about this with me, and she's like, "Well, I don't understand, like, what, you know, these women trying to get money out of it? Why?" And I'm like, "No, hold on, think about this. If you are not super famous as a woman and you accuse a powerful movie producer of this, it's going to get buried and careers over."
Right.
It's happened.
Right, right.
Right? That is not...
there's no doubt.
There's no doubt about that. We know that that's happened. So, and there were people, I think Rose McGowan was one of them and Courtney Love was another one. There are women over the years who've accused Harvey Weinstein of this and everyone just ignored them.
Yes.
Because they were on the, not the, you know, A-lister types. And so it was easier for it to be brushed under the rug. So
easier for the accusations of they're just trying to get more popularity.
Right,
they're trying to get another 15 minutes, whatever.
Look, I studied this kind of stuff. It was part of the same curriculum as focusing on single mother families. It kind of went hand in hand with that kind of stuff, like what women are up against in that regard. And it's absolutely the women as well as men are almost the same likelihood to turn on a woman who accuses a man of something. It's not equal, but it's shocking how many women are likely to be like, "Oh, you're just trying to get money. You're just trying to get attention. You're trying to get this." Like, the rationalization is so patriarchal in nature that
it's ingrained into our society.
It's totally ingrained.
Our culture. It's not... I mean, obviously, the bulk of the problem is with the guys. But there's also the problem with some attitude with women.
Okay, well,
not all women.
It's
again,
funny you say that. Yeah. So I actually had a conversation with my wife, and I said, "You know, I see these Me Too messages going up."
Yes.
And I was groped by a female instructor when I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, for a split second thought about doing a Me Too, and I thought, you know what? I don't want to take away from this. You know, what I experienced was pretty fucked up, like looking back on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a one-time thing, but it was such a different thing.
Right. Because that was a person with power over you.
Yeah.
With authority and power.
Yeah.
As opposed to like a coworker in a restaurant, which is probably not really something we want to call acceptable, but...
Power dynamics play a big part in what makes this wrong.
Yes.
Not all of it, but it's definitely part of it.
Yes.
The Kevin Spaceys of the world offering you career advancement if you fillet them. You know what I mean? Like, it's sad because it makes so much sense. Like, it doesn't surprise me, you know, that kind of thing is so prevalent. But regardless, so I had this moment where I was like, okay, you know, I'm not even that embarrassed about this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to get into it because I really don't want to accuse anyone. Although there were many witnesses. But there were multiple instances of some pretty gropey behavior and outside of class in one instance too, involving alcohol. And it was like, looking back, it's like, it's really fucked up. But it doesn't feel the same. And it felt like it would cheapen what, you know, these women are finally being empowered to say without fear of repercussion.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, but yeah, not only are women, not only are there some women who have been ingrained in this patriarchal way of looking at things where they turn on the woman who was wronged, right? And who mm-hmm. had the courage to speak up. But there are some women who use their power to abuse it too. It's just so not anywhere near the level and the amount and as common a thing as men do it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it's I think Paul said it. It can't just be in the movie industry, you know?
Yeah. It's, oh, no.
Anywhere where there's power dynamics at play. But yeah, that's everything I wanted to say.
All right. Yeah,
but yeah, no, to go back to what it all started with, I mean, I look back and I laugh because there was no, like, in the restaurant stuff, there was no ill will. It wasn't really, it was so normal in the New York waitery actor scene for that kind of behavior to
okay.
be like that.
I appreciate where you're coming from. But at the same time, I want to point out that's some of the language that's been used to make up for or to excuse right. a lot of the, you know, probably at some point somebody's used that argument to excuse whatever Weinstein's done. Sure. This is definitely the language used to excuse the accusations against Dustin Hoffman that came up recently.
Right.
That it was just the way it was back then, you know, it was normal. He was a creepy old guy, and mm-hmm. it was just okay because it was all in good fun.
But here's the thing. Here's the difference. I don't think it's analogous.
I don't think it is either, and that's why I wanted to, you know, take another step here. Go ahead.
Right, but it's the difficulty here is it's the difference between a man hitting on a woman or a man hitting on a man, and then the power dynamics being there or not being there.
Okay, yeah.
So we agree, my instructor in college groping me,
mm-hmm.
that's pretty fucked up.
Right. And that, from what I've gathered here, that bothered you a lot more than the waiters.
Yes. There was a power thing there, right?
Right.
And there was like a Harold and Maude thing that felt weird.
Yeah.
You know, it made me feel weird at the time.
Mm-hmm.
A gay friend, coworker and friend, you know, someone who I would have drinks with and generally enjoyed hanging out with, like there was no power dynamic there. This wasn't right. someone who in any way could really influence my job. So that, when you remove that, it's a gay guy acting in a way towards a cis male that isn't right, but is pretty normal given the environment. Right.
Now, just hypothetically, mm-hmm. in the waitering situation, if you had said, I'm really uncomfortable with this, could you please not do that? And I'm genuinely not. It is really bothering me when you or whoever else is doing that. Would they have said, like, okay, never mind, we're not going to.
Yeah, but I probably would have been labeled a homophobe.
Really?
I have no doubt.
Huh.
Norms. You're talking about sub-societal norms. These are microcosms. They have their own rules at play. And you have to understand, I wasn't particularly bothered by it then. I'm only slightly more bothered by it now in retrospect.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't view it as the same thing. And I am trying to, and I always take context into play.
Yeah.
Like when everyone's, I know the language is the Weinstein excuse language, so I get it. But
yeah.
I'm going to call it exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. It's difficult because homosexuality is involved here.
Mm-hmm.
And no power dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't, it's sort of like, In the conversation that's happening right now, a very important conversation, the Harvey Weinstein conversation, this isn't charted territory, you know? Right. Like, that's well-worn in terms of, I think most people can admit that it's fucked up. Okay. This is a little different because, well, why is it fucked up? Is it because I'm cis? Is it because I didn't know better? Is it wrong? Is it not wrong? I don't fucking know. I don't even care that much. It's more of a joke. Like, yeah, I'd get my ass grabbed. I'd get excited, turn around. I was a guy and be like, you silly. Like, you know, it's literally how it would play out. It just mm-hmm. would play out multiple times. So, and I don't have an answer. And it's a conversation someone can have and feel free to, you know, but we live in sensitive times and I am trying to be very sensitive to every marginalized group. And what they have experienced,
I know you're not being sarcastic right now.
No, I'm yeah, being 100% serious. If I sound sarcastic, I apologize. It is just
Mike,
such
you
a
always
difficult.
Sound sarcastic.
I know. No, I always talk like this. It's just a really tough thing to talk about. You know, I mean, check your privilege at the door, right? cis white male. Right. I'm always going to be wrong.
So what the hell were you talking about until I derailed you here?
Let's talk about this drink.
Okay, this is a good drink. Is there rum in this? What's in this?
Yeah, so I...
This is a nice, a very well-spiked eggnog.
Yes. So it is a derivative of the Bushwhacker.
Ooh.
And I don't always have an idea. Sometimes I challenge myself when I go to Wegmans to like...
I like this.
Good.
I'm enjoying this.
So there's a little bit of story to it. So I went to Wegmans and I challenged myself. I said, I don't have a drink. Let me grab something and then get an idea. And I was just looking around. I had Simon in the cart. I was getting, you know, some stuff to make him dinner. And I saw cream of coconut.
Mm.
And I'm like, I love cream of coconut in drinks.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck can I do with that? So I just looked up cream of coconut cocktail recipe.
Okay.
And I found the Bushwhacker, and there's three different versions of it. So it's normally like a frozen mudslide drink.
Okay.
So the original recipe for this is light rum, dark rum, Kahlua, all of which are in here.
Mm. All right.
And then cream of coconut, which is also in here. And mm-hmm. they wanted you to use half and half.
Okay.
Ooh. And that's... they said, you can substitute ice cream. And I thought...
Ice cream sounds like a little much for that.
Too. Yeah. And so I was trying to find something in between. Because we've made an ice cream drink before. And you know, it's a dessert. Which this practically is. But then I'm looking around the store and it's Christmas shit everywhere. And I'm like, Bushwhacked for the holidays. That's the name of the drink. And that means I'm doing eggnog. Instead of half and half. So that's what's in this.
Is this what this is? Holiday Bushwhack?
This is a Bushwhacked for the holidays.
Okay.
Or by the... I guess Bushwhacked by the holidays would be a
better name. I like it.
Fuck you, Waterport, New York. This is some robocaller. I get it almost every day.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll edit that out.
Leave it in. I want Waterport to know. They need to go fuck themselves.
So, little bits here. Today was voting day.
Mm-hmm.
We voted.
There were not a lot of Democratic options on the ballot.
I know. It's a little... I left some things blank. I'll be honest.
It's like, why are the Democrats all one party and then it's like...
not even trying.
Republican, not conservative, working family. It's all the same person. Like, how do you get on all those? What?
But the most important part of this is that there's a new sticker. A new I voted sticker.
You're mad about this.
I am a little bit...
I can't even find mine. I would show it to you.
So the guy
went up to me mm-hmm. to give it to me. I mean, I was there like 8:45 this morning
mm-hmm.
and he hands me, I noticed instead of going to put on my coat, he hands me a sticker with the backing on it. And he looks at me and he goes, I'm not putting this on you because people said they want to save them because they're collectible.
Yeah.
And I looked and it said it's 100 years since, you know, women got the vote. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Which is cool. Because it's always just the regular "I voted today"
with your sporting crappy proudly.
Sticker, which is on my shirt right now, which is what I got when I voted. And I was at work today, and I was like, I saw so many people with that new sticker. I was like, oh, what? That's cool. I want that. I want one of those. But no,
don't go it.
I put my vote. I put my ballot in. It went ballot accepted. And the lady goes, "Here's your sticker." And I'm like, really? This is where are the nice ones? I'm like. Nope, there it is. Get your little
Did you argue with them? You
totally
no. Like, lady, come on.
Like 80-year-old woman there working. Lady, I'm not going to argue with her.
I know you were there when you got the right to vote, but I would like that sticker, please.
No, so I'm a little bummed out about that. I'm glad you got your stupid 100 anniversary stickers.
Early bird gets the sticker, dog. I don't know what to tell you. I'm offended, though. You have done something to egregiously offend me.
Oh, I have.
Yeah.
Just one thing?
Yeah, but a big one. You have not fucking noticed that I've redid this room, and there's like a brand new 6-foot-tall bookcase over there, and all my statues are right behind you.
I don't notice shit, Mike.
Right behind you.
I don't notice shit.
There's a new firefly statue in there.
Oh, God
damn
it, man. Come on. I can't keep track of your goddamn firefly statues. It's full of...
It's more full than it was
yesterday.
It's
full of firefly statues.
It's full of stars.
Okay, so the stuff that was over there is over here now.
Yeah.
All right.
All my comics are down here now. Jerk.
Well, it's lovely.
Thank you.
I love what you've done with the
place.
Thank
you. It's all matching furniture. I've been tracking the designer line down. All of my awful, 8-year-old phone equipment's all hidden now, finally.
It's very nice.
Thank you. That's all I wanted.
There we go. Okay, what else we got? Do we want to jump into the topic?
The topic of du jour.
Yeah.
Is the soup du jour?
Let's backtrack.
We haven't actually had a non-guest episode in like.
Yeah, so we got some stuff to talk about. So it was a couple weeks ago now, more than a couple weeks ago, a little more than a couple weeks. We had a little gaming party, and we played a couple of new games.
Yes,
I wanted to bring those up and say a little bit about them.
All right.
So the first one that we played. And I thought it was pretty fun. It was
Secret Hitler.
Secret
Hitler is always a fun.
Hitler was pretty fun.
Yep.
It's like if you've played
Resistance
or it's Werewolf, very similar or Werewolf. It's kind of like that. It's a hidden roles game.
It's another Mafia derivative.
Yeah.
They all tie back to Mafia. But this one had enough going on where it was really skewed more towards good guys.
Well, there was some drinking going on, and I think the bad guys made some pretty, really poor decisions. But we just
I don't know how to be a fascist. I'm so not a fascist in real life that when I drink, my fascist abilities just shit the bed.
Yeah. So we did one playthrough, and it was fun. It went pretty fast.
Yeah.
I think it plays a little faster than Resistance.
Well, there's less pontificating.
If we played it like two more times, that might be completely different. It might
Our house rule seems to be make those fucking games long and talky.
Yeah.
And just start shouting fascist or spy or whatever at each other.
But yeah, without getting too much into the game details, there's one team is the fascists, and Hitler's on the fascist team, and the other team is the liberals.
Mm-hmm. And the fascists know who Hitler and each other are, but Hitler doesn't know who any of the other fascists are.
Yeah.
Which is so interesting.
Yeah, and it's a the fascists are trying to pass fascist rules, and the liberals are trying to pass liberal rules, and whoever gets the most gets to their target at the end wins. Or if the liberals manage to find and kill Hitler, then they win.
That's pretty much always gonna let you
win. Killing Hitler,
you win. Insta win in life and in games.
Yeah, and that's how that one ended. Actually, the liberal team killed Hitler.
After you killed me first.
Yeah, well, that was fine.
I was a fascist.
Yeah, you were definitely
a fascist. I was asking for it.
It was a lot of fun. I would definitely be happy to play that again.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It'll probably take like three more hours than what we did.
I would like to play a little more sober.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just shit the bed early then, because I couldn't do the accents game for shit. That was weird. Part of my brain just shut off instantly.
So yeah, it might be a little bit intimidating for when you see all the stuff and you like see the rules for Secret Hitler. It seems complicated at first.
Yeah,
because there's like a bunch of different cards and a bunch of different like things and stuff.
It's still one quarter of the number of pieces of any other games that we play.
Well, except when you compare the Resistance which is
yeah.
Like,
although Resistance has got a lot of expansions and shit, so I don't know. There may be more stuff in that.
Anyway, once you like play just a couple of rounds of it, it becomes very, very easy, very obvious, very, very quickly what you want to do in it. So I would definitely recommend that. And I think we played, it was like 10, must have been at least 10 people playing.
Yeah, about that.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a good game, probably for like 7 to 10 or so, however many players.
There were 4 fascists counting Hitler. There had to be more liberals. So yeah, I think 10 or 11.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And then we played Joking Hazard.
That was a funny game.
All right, you want to talk about that one since I talked about Secret Hitler?
Yeah, so it has that apples to apples Cards Against Humanity judging mechanic. You know, where everyone kind of, the judge, it's a rotating judge, and when it's your turn, you put down, like, the source of the thing, and then everyone else, but the way it was a comic strip, like a stick figure
it's
comic strip.
Specifically, Cyanide and Happiness is the comic.
Right, so a very sardonic, twisted wit.
Yes.
and then you would usually provide the punchline to two preceding panels of a comic strip.
Yes.
So like on a normal turn, the judge puts down like two, like the first and second panel, and then everyone gets to put in their best effort at or burn card.
Yeah.
For it, like the funniest way to end it, and then appealing, knowing, you know, the judge as well as they do, trying to appeal to their sense of humor.
Yes.
And then there were some small derivations, but that was That's pretty much it. And we all agreed it was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, it was. And I think one of the advantages of this, of that game, I felt over Cards Against Humanity was that even like the burn cards, you could still find something that
yeah,
worked.
Yeah,
there's nothing like, this doesn't make any sense, but yep. Here it is. Mm-hmm. Which actually happens a lot in Cards Against Humanity.
Yes. And I find that Cards Against Humanity, like, I really need to be in the right mood for that game for mm-hmm. me to do well in it. Mm. Or I start to, especially if I get a lot of cards that don't work, I start to play in my own sense of humor, mm-hmm. which is basically just throwing the game away because you're supposed to play to the other person's sense of humor. Mm-hmm. But this, like, so many things were funny mm-hmm. that I was able to giggle and still get some points out of it, which was a good sign because for the curmudgeons like me, I need a little help to actually
right.
be playing for other people.
I think the only criticism we had, and we were playing again with like probably 10 or 11 people, is we went through the whole deck of cards pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So if you're playing with a smaller group, you'll get a little more mileage out of it.
4 to 6 would be a good number.
Yeah, yeah. There are 2 expansions for it out now, and a third one's coming up. So I'm definitely getting those expansions.
Yeah, I'm just remembering some of the funniest stuff. It was awesome. The way your third card can make the joke different but better.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's hard
and to it's explain. It's a messed up humor. It's in that same in the same vein of Cards Against Humanity.
Yeah, but it works better.
Like, you know, intentionally offensive. Like,
right.
This is not for the faint of heart or the prudish or people who are. Want to be more politically correct.
It's not for any of them.
Not for.
But the thing,
if you're a decent human being, this is not a good game.
Just stay away from this game. If you wake up early on Sunday, don't play this game. One thing I liked about it was because there's 2 characters, like the same joke could run through it from one character's standpoint and then the other one. So there was that mm-hmm. slightly strategic element of like, I have this perfect card. If this situation was reversed, so I need to sit on it.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make sense like this necessarily, but if I do, you know, then it's like the perfect joke.
Now, there was a couple of variations that came in the rules that we didn't even try.
Oh, really?
And one of them is just like making one giant strip out of it, which would be kind of cool to try.
Do you score points? You could just do it for
fun. I don't know. Okay.
It would be interesting. Yeah.
So, yeah, it seems like it's got a little more flexibility mm-hmm. too than Cards Against Humanity. So there we go.
Yeah, there we go.
There you go.
There we go. My job changed.
Yeah.
But not yet.
But not yet. Will it have changed by the time this is being aired?
No, probably by the beginning of the year.
Okay.
So.
So you're just going to back off on that?
Just let everyone know I still got a job, as far as I know. It's really all they need to know. I don't relish talking about my job because I don't think most people find it interesting. Like, I do, but, like, I could talk for hours about building an interactive course.
It's like, please don't.
So then, the engagement and efficacy is increased by 2%. Scene.
And scene.
Someone's a rant. I miss doing rants. So I don't bore people with my job. I mean, I long ago realized my wife's job is way more interesting than mine, and that's totally fine.
So we have Thanksgiving. Did you take Simon out for his
trick-or-treating?
Halloween, I mean.
Yeah, I was so excited to stuff the turkey and then parade it around in the street in a costume and get people to throw cranberry sauce at him.
This sounds like such a... So much of a better tradition than what we've been doing. I'm on board.
You enjoy bathing in cranberry sauce.
I will now.
Let's just make it clear. This is a fetish of yours. Don't put it on me. So Simon was fucking so excited for Halloween that he...
Now, he went last year, but it was like kind of a more carrying him around sort of thing,
No, he walked. He was almost 3 last year. But it played out the same way. He got super excited, insisted on wearing his costume every day for days leading up to it.
Mm-hmm.
He outgrew his costume before Halloween because he's a fucking giant. And then he trick-or-treats for 15 minutes, gets too cold because he won't let us bundle him up. And then goes
home. It was really cold this time.
I think it was colder last year. and he makes it like 6-7 houses and then we're home.
Which and, you're probably fine with.
Well, yeah, but you know, I'm excited for him and I could see him losing interest so quick. And it's after dark, but it's not too late because, you know, this is that time of year. So it's like, I'm excited for him. And then and his grandfather came with us and he was really excited. But yeah, it was our street is severely short on trick-or-treaters, but everybody gives candy. So you could fucking clean up on this street if you just had the wherewithal. Like, kids, the older kids come around with pillowcases. They know what they're doing.
And this is like a small, this is a circle, really. A tiny.
It's a loop. It's a loop.
Yeah, it's a loop. It's a little loop.
It's a loop with a little couple of loops off of
the. So I imagine a lot of the kids go across the street to the other subdivision.
The fancier.
Yeah.
The $100,000 up from ours one. Yeah. That would be a strategic mistake. Because the rich people have more land. So you're getting less population density. Now, they might give out the full-size candy bars.
Yeah,
I don't know.
What you're looking for. I don't know. What you're looking for.
Yeah, but you know what? If you can get 3 fun sizes in the time it takes you to get 1 full-size, Mike, start doing the math, my friend. Start doing the math. This is why children fail at, like, having jobs, because they can't think like this until they're older. Words to live by. That seems like a good segue to Stranger Things 2.
Yes, which had some trick-or-treating scenes.
Mm-hmm. So, I guess we should say at this point, 31 minutes in, if you have not yet finished Stranger Things 2, which is the name the Duffer Brothers gave season 2 of Stranger Things, just stop listening at this point.
Right.
Spoilers ahead.
We can't emphasize this enough.
Yeah.
We are about to start talking about Stranger Things 2.
The second season of Netflix's original show, Stranger Things.
And we are going to be talking spoiling about all sorts of spoilers. No holds barred.
I don't know what else to say.
Your last chance.
Yeah, I mean, so why are you still? Why the fuck are you still listening?
All right, so you've gone, you've watched it now. Right. You're back in to the podcast. Awesome.
First of all, I am so proud of my wife, who binged 4 episodes on Friday night. They came out 4 episodes Saturday night, and then we finished it on Sunday. Like, she has only ever binged more than that on Adventure Time with you and your old Adventure Time binge.
Oh,
days.
Man.
But that's a cartoon, that and it's easy to get through.
It is, but once you get through like 3 or 4 of them, there's so many. It's overwhelming.
Right.
And you're only talking about 4, but we're going like through like a couple dozen in a day.
Yeah, you were doing more binging. That was more binging than this. But she hasn't binged since then until this. She can't do more than 3 episodes of something in a day.
It's easy to binge because there's only, what, 9 episodes?
Yep.
Episodes?
Okay. One more than last year.
So, yeah.
So, general questions.
Okay.
Did you like this? Which season do you like more, season 1 or season 2?
I think season 1
I'm with you.
Was a little more solid.
I'm with you. Why?
It was a much more defined everything, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
There were some missteps I felt like in second season, which kind of took away from the pace and took away from just the tension and the scariness of the whole thing.
Okay.
Whereas the first season, it was like, there was a lot more, actually, there was a lot more scary stuff in the first season.
Yeah. You didn't, there was the unknown factor.
Yes.
You didn't know what the fuck was going on for a lot of it.
Yes.
Which was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, all the unknown stuff, the stuff about the, just generally, the upside down was a fuck ton more scary in the first season than it was in the second season.
Yeah, the second one, there's like having a little party because a bunch of dudes over there turning machines on. It's like, okay, stop being scary.
Yeah,
the upside down should be a terrifying Silent Hill esque thing, and now it's like, oh great, we got some equipment set up. All right, everyone, pop open a beer.
All right, so in big picture terms, first season was Alien,
right?
Second season was Aliens.
Yep.
In a lot of ways.
I hope to God the third season is not Alien 3.
Yeah, Resurrection or whatever.
They kill everyone except 11.
And I mean, it was very obvious that the main influence for season 2 was Aliens. I mean, you even had Paul Reiser.
Yes, that was a big nod. Don't underplay Indiana Jones, though. There was a fuck ton of Indiana Jones.
You think so?
Yeah. Jesus Christ, they did the whole he said, she said muttering scene right before Nancy and Jonathan get together. That was shot for shot Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom.
It's been such a long time
since. Hopper goes back for his hat and grabs it right before.
Oh, yeah.
There's
right.
a ton of that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of Indiana Jones in there.
Okay.
I think it's difficult to, like, there are many listicles devoted to all the influences. And I think it's hard to say any one thing is the main influence.
Yeah.
I will agree that there are probably more aliens than most other references.
Yes. Because you've got, gosh.
Well, you had one Demogorgon, and then you have a pack of Demo Dogs, right?
Right.
You have,
that's aliens.
You have scientists who know what the fuck they're doing in the first one. You have fully armed teams doing burns and coordinated strikes.
Yes.
Who also get taken down.
Yes.
Like in Aliens.
And you've got the same motion detector scenes.
Yep. Oh, and Paul Reiser.
And Paul Reiser. Being almost the same character.
Yeah.
but not an asshole. But that was a good twist. That was a twist I really liked.
Yeah. I actually didn't see that
coming. I didn't either. And that was that. It was that one line he had when he was in the meeting with the other scientists.
Oh,
he's like, okay, what can we do to get this, to handle the situation? Well, the things inside will, and it's going, bad things are happening in the upside down. And then they're like, well, we can, you know, we should just burn it and not worry about the boy. And he said, I want you to tell me, I want you to say that to me again.
Yeah, again.
And that would, that long, one line was like,
oh,
boop. Yeah. Didn't see that coming.
Your heart of stone. Just
I know. And there were, okay. While we're talking about characters,
yeah, that go for it.
Turn things around.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. Let's hear it for Steve.
I mean, I like Steve after the first one, but man,
yeah.
He had... So, funny backstory here. So, I've done a lot of research and you know, interviews and stuff. I've read a lot of interviews. So, the Duffer brothers, when they were plotting out season two, they said early on, oh, Dustin, because of Dart, Dustin kind of does his own thing for a while. And without Nancy, Steve doesn't really have anything. He's just mopey. And they're like, oh, we got to put them together. And that might be... my favorite part of this season, even more than
that,
like Hopper and 11.
Scenes. Yeah,
like the Hopper and 11 stuff was good, but there's some stuff I could have done better, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
But the Steve and Dustin team up,
yeah,
I just fucking loved it.
Well, it turns out, I mean, I can't remember the actor's name who plays Steve.
Oh, I can't either.
But it was just giving him some comedy stuff to work with.
Yeah, and he did it well. He's a very well-rounded.
It.
He's a well-rounded.
Yeah,
he's a singer too. He got a band. He's one of those guys who does a lot of shit well. I guess late all the time. One of those guys.
Well, he and the kid who plays Dustin is obviously incredibly talented.
Broadway actor. Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't. I told you before. I didn't care for that the Dart storyline too much. I don't think the payoff for it was really worth it. But it was such obvious. Yeah, it was.
Erica, by the second or third season, she goes, "That's going to be important and save
of
them
course.
Later."
It's going to be important, but it's really not.
Well, I mean, they engineered it to be important.
I know. It was on this. But
like, why? Well, think about it. Why was that the only demo dog anywhere near them? Like, the entire rest of the pack didn't come up till later when they ran by them in that really cool moment.
Yeah.
Like, it was a very ham-fisted, not very organic way of shoving the Dart relationship back in at the end for the payoff.
Yeah, it was ham-fisted, but I think they did it because it was such an 80s movie trope.
Right, and I totally give it a pass.
Yeah.
I totally give it a pass for that.
All right, that's fair enough.
Because it's homage.
But, as much as I didn't really care for that subplot, that storyline...
It brought them together.
Dustin sold it.
Yeah.
He did such a good job with it,
mm-hmm.
with this to me, kind of tired...
Trope.
That it worked for me nonetheless.
I agree. I like that it brought him and Steve together. It offered that mechanic, right, to get them together, which I thought was funny.
Yeah, and the thing with them, that whole scene with them walking on the railroad tracks was I agree, that was one of the high points of the season.
Erica loved, her favorite line of the whole season was a very good line where Max is helping set up the showdown in the junkyard.
Mm-hmm.
And Lucas and Dustin are just like huddled behind a car talking. And then like Steve comes up and he's like, hey, shitheads, why is the random girl doing? Don't want to help me do anything? It's just such a great... I love all the adventures in babysitting, like, jokes that people are making with Steve, because it's totally legit.
Well, he calls it out, too.
Yeah, well, I'm maybe a shitty boyfriend, but I'm a damn good babysitter. Yeah. He's really not in a lot of ways, but, you know.
No. And we see some really poor choices in terms of, like, advice and, you know, what to do with somebody who's been knocked out by repeated blows to the head. Yeah. You don't want to load them into a car.
But there is a long-standing thing in Hollywood that has always boggled my mind, and that is the lack of there being any repercussions long-term to head trauma. People get beaten up and hit in the head by every hard object known to mankind in movies and get up an hour later and are fine.
Yeah.
Like, it's unreal.
Another thing I really liked, I loved Murray.
Yeah.
In the first episode when he came in, I didn't... Yeah.
Well, you weren't really supposed to. It's like he's kind of taking advantage of them.
Right. But when Jonathan and Nancy came to see him, oh my God, he was just stealing every scene there.
And again, that is kind of his shtick in everything I've ever seen him in. But you know what? When it works, the shoe fits. You wear the fuck out of that shoe, man.
It was perfect. He played super well because those are two of the more serious, not comedic characters.
In the show, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and he got to play, like, I liked that he was the audience.
Yeah.
When he's, like, making all the points that the audience is making. Yeah. He's like, you guys have shared trauma. Clearly you're into each other. It's like, just get the shit on already. And then cut to the obvious Indiana Jones, the Temple of Doom thing. And then they hook up. And then all the funny stuff in the next morning. Like, how was the pullout? And the spit take. I was trying to think, like, was pull out a term that people used sexually in the 80s? I mean, yeah, I'll give it to them. But there's definitely those moments where, like, people didn't really say that
back then. Yeah, but still.
It was funny.
It was still funny.
What'd you think of Billy? Young Rob Lowe.
The stepbrother?
Yeah.
Okay. Super overdone, way overdone on the abusive stepbrother thing.
Right.
Wonderful scene as the young stud kind of hitting on
the MILF
on Mike's mom. Mm-hmm. That scene was gold.
And they prefaced it so well, like. I mean, watching it again, because we watched the last two episodes with you guys, like, seeing it, I was looking for the way mechanically that they set up, and it's so well done. They establish she's in the bathtub,
mm-hmm.
Candles, romance, novel, music. Obviously, she's unfulfilled.
Yeah.
Doorbell rings. We already know her husband's a douche. But cut to her husband, who, this is the only time this woman can get romance in her life. And her husband is asleep on the chair right next to the front door and won't wake up to get it. So she has to get out of the bath. And so, of course, she's going to be totally, like, won over instantly by this guy.
Yeah.
And it was just, and she plays it so well and so flustered. It's so funny.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm not a big fan of the rest of his stuff, but that one scene was just perfect.
I don't fault the actor. I think the writing, and they said, the Duffer said, I just was watching Beyond Stranger Things episode one before you got here.
Okay.
And the Duffers said, that's what Steve was like originally. And then they cast the guy who plays Steve, and they're like, oh, nope, we can't do this. He's doing a way different thing, and we like it, so we're going to change Steve entirely.
Oh, the aggressive stuff?
Yeah. Well, he raped Nancy in the original.
Oh.
Like, the original.
Steve did?
Yeah.
Oh.
The original treatment for season one.
Oh, jeez.
And you can totally see Billy doing that. So, like, you can see they really transferred. They said that they wanted a human antagonist for season two. And mm-hmm. so they just took all the stuff that they had to drop with the original version of Steve and just put it into Billy.
Hmm.
So I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I think that would have been a bad call with giving that stuff to Steve.
Well, that actor.
Yeah.
The actor, I mean, look at Sean Astin. Sean Astin auditioned for Murray. He sent a tape in, first of all, mm-hmm. and they had no idea he was doing it. They sent me on Beyond Stranger Things. They're like, I was going through the tapes, and all of a sudden there was Samwise Gamgee. We were all like, what? We were all shocked. He auditioned for Murray, and then they cast him as Bob, and Bob, like, was originally going to die in, like, the third episode, and they were like, he's so good. Sean Astin is so good as this character. We have to kill him, but we're going to stretch it out as long as possible.
All right.
So the actor will change the character, is my point.
All right. Yeah. So while we're on Bob, I was I thought definitely, it was bad. Yeah, I know. I like everyone thought that. Mm-hmm. Not everyone, but most. I think most people were like, "This guy's obviously not what he seems.
Too dorky.
Yeah.
Too pure. He gives the worst advice in the world to Will." Yeah. Which, okay, you can't really blame him for. He didn't know what he was up against.
Right.
You know. But he really fucked everything up. Not that I think the smoke monster, the mind flayer, wasn't going to get Will eventually.
Yeah, I don't think that was...
Felt inevitable.
Yeah, that was... That
but
was
there was a lot
stacked. Because it was getting closer him. Every time.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I picked up on that too. So I don't really fault him for that. And the Duffer said, you can't blame Bob for that.
No.
He didn't know what he was doing. But there was a lot of... For savvy television watchers, there mm-hmm. was a lot of hints about Bob that really made him seem like he was going to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then he wasn't. And of course, his death is that much more tragic.
Yeah.
Although, again, stupidly unnecessary. Yeah, I get you're happy to see Winona Ryder. I would be too. But you say that outside.
Yeah.
You keep fucking running. Uh-huh. Like, I timed it the second time. So I knew it was going to happen. I'm like, no, they would have made it. Just straight. Didn't stop. Takes a breath. Hey, bam. Run, Bob, run.
Yeah. And especially as soon as that broom hits the floor, just you're at full run.
Well, I love that.
A noise happened, gone.
But it was so funny because right as he's opening the door, you go, at least
bring a broom. No, that was Mel. Oh, Mel said that.
Mel was like, at least bring a broom with you or something. I'm like, okay, it fell. There you go, Mel. It's funny you should mention that. But it's just like,
That was funny.
Okay. So, Let me take a step back.
New care. Okay, go ahead.
Well, no, you're right. Yeah, we're going through the garden. I'll give my take on it, too.
Max.
There's a lot of controversy around Max.
Yeah.
Because that's the fucking world we live in now.
Yeah. I don't know what real purpose she was serving, except as sort of a foil for... And do we call her Jane or Elle now?
The Jane... L. She's always going to be L.
But her birth certificate now is Jane.
It doesn't fucking matter. Everyone's going to know her. They're going to
be calling
L.
her Jane in season 3.
Yeah, but everyone's going to know her as L.
All right.
Or 11.
So, yes, except to sort of serve as a shitty foil for L.
She was a punching bag for most of the season. Yeah. Everyone wanted to exclude her for different reasons. Like including her stepbrother.
Yeah.
Like, she just kind of got shit on for a lot of it. And
which is weird, because at the beginning, they're like, she's the coolest character.
Yeah. She comes in and she is the new 11. She's the cool girl, and she knocks out the high score, and then there's the love, you know, the love triangle.
Mike hates her.
Yeah.
Elle briefly sees her and hates her immediately.
Yeah. That was so trope-y.
Dustin starts liking her, but then is like, no, fuck her, because...
I guess Lucas, she likes Lucas,
sort of, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that they dropped that, so I was afraid they were going to continue that at the dance at the end, but he just kept going from popular girl to popular girl, which is pretty funny.
We're going with that the last scene with Dustin there?
Yeah.
I know I'm not the only one who feels like this way, that scene with him, like, asking the girl out and, like, looking around... And then just sort of giving up. I mean, who hasn't had that feeling?
Mm-hmm.
That scene rang more true for me than anything else in the whole series.
Wait, really? A show about demonic possession and creatures from other worlds?
I'm just saying. I was saying this when we were watching it. It's like, yep, I've been there. I was never even as outgoing as him.
I wasn't either.
I
knew the feeling, but I never had the balls to do that much.
Yeah.
I never had the vagina to do that much.
Yeah.
I just never had that much bravery.
That was a great moment. A sad moment, but definitely.
Well, all I could think was, like, he has Steve coaching him, and then he has Nancy coaching him at the end. Like, he's going to be the fucking shit in a couple of years.
He will.
By the time he's a senior, he's going to own that school. He's not going to be hanging out with those kids anymore. In the real world, he would leave Mike and Will and...
Yeah.
Lucas behind.
Yeah.
But to go back to Max.
Yes, going back to Max.
I had my issues with the actress's eyes being magnetically drawn in every direction at once. Like, she acted with her eyes and her eyelids a lot, which mm-hmm. annoyed me. It was just too much. It's like someone who acts on stage and is on camera for the first time. They're like, oh, you have to tone everything down because it's way bigger because it's on camera. It felt like that. So, you know, I was like, okay, just take a step back, girl who's playing Maxine. The whole kiss thing, that's the big controversy, to find something controversial. The fact that they were talking about it, and like Millie Bobby Brown was apparently quite the instigator there.
Oh.
Yeah. Her and Finn Wolfhard, who plays Mike, were the ones who like had the idea for the kiss. But then like Millie Bobby Brown was like fucking with the girl who plays Maxine about it.
Oh.
And she really didn't want to do it. And she's like, oh, it'll be the most amazing thing. And it was just totally talking it up and just made it worse. It was just basically kind of kids being shitty to each other. But.
Yeah, which, okay, I can get the kids being shitty, but it's, you know, the adults in the room have to be the adults in the room for that situation.
Right. Well, I mean, the adults don't necessarily know what the kids are saying all the time, but the controversy is the actress didn't want her first kiss to be that on camera, and it wasn't scripted.
Oh, understandable, yeah.
It wasn't scripted. Like, I when Erica first told me about that, because I hadn't read the articles yet about it, I got annoyed, because I'm like, you're an actress. Like, that's...
Well, you're a kid too,
right? And I know that was her counter argument. But I'm like, but if you have advance warning that you have to do this kiss, it is you're contractually obligated to do the script. This is not child porn. It's a peck on the lips. I think that's ridiculous to be upset.
Yeah, but it wasn't in the script.
But then I found out what wasn't scripted. And okay. I was like, okay, that's shitty.
Yeah.
So because they had a kiss already, you got the Mike and L kiss. Mm-hmm. I can't say Jane. I just can't do it.
All
right. So I don't know. It's ridiculous that everything has to be politicized now. But
This isn't politicized. It's just being shitty to a kid.
Well, I mean, the internet has to blow everything up. How about that?
All right.
So, yeah, it's kind of shitty. I felt like her character didn't get enough of a point. I loved her and Lucas together. You know? Because Lucas needed something. He was just, like, the constantly angry guy.
Yeah.
You know, and this softened him. And it was cute. It was really cute watching him pine and...
Yeah.
The stuff in the mirror.
Lucas's little sister was great, too.
Oh, she stole it. Yeah. Every scene she was in, she just fucking stole it. When she just mouthed, nerd. It was amazing. It was like, I felt like I was watching What's-His-Face from Revenge of the Nerds. But instead of nerds, it was nerd. So, all right, let me just take a step back really quick. So, I loved the shit out of season two, watching it. And I think we're going to end up at the big thing at the end with episode 7. But,
yes. Yep.
in retrospect, I agree. Season 1 is a better season for a number of reasons, but that's not really digging too much on season 2.
Okay.
Season 2 had a big problem with how they aired 6 and 7 in the order they did it. I'll talk about it, but I'm firmly convinced I'm right on this.
All
right. The other thing is that, and you pointed this out, and you're absolutely right, like, they had to kind of remove 11 from everything to let anything bad actually happen, because she's so strong. It's a Superman problem.
Yeah.
Right? It's why for...
If you ever watched the old Doctor Who episodes, is the K-9 problem.
Oh, the dog?
Yeah, because his robot dog would just do... It would... take care of anything.
Right.
So they always had to like make it malfunction or give him some sort of problem and take it out of the picture.
It's the Luke Skywalker losing his powers in every Star Wars novel.
Yeah.
I don't have the Force anymore. Again, why do I keep losing the Force? So, I get why narratively you have to do that, but unfortunately, like, that dynamic, that chemistry was so strong between the group that they formed, you know?
Yeah.
And without it, it really felt like something was lacking.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, I really don't think season 2 was bad at all. Because what it did was it beat the sophomore slump. I think it's very hard for any show to be that, out of nowhere, that successful.
Mm-hmm.
And then not totally fucking shit the bed in season 2. You know what I mean? It's still fun. And it did, it felt like, and I binged the second half of season 1 to remind myself.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the day of season 2 starting, I was ready, and it felt like they had all aired at once. And so my hat's off in a big way to Duffers and Sean Levy and everyone else, with all the actors.
All right, quick question then, since you watched the first season so recently.
The second half of the first season.
Okay. Steve, did he have that members only jacket in the first season?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Because I'm like, that's a members only jacket.
Jesus Christ. You're
I
so
used to have that
thing. Members they came back.
I had that same jacket.
I think you can get it from China now. Pretty sure they have a really convincing knockoff.
I'm just saying, I noticed, I was impressed.
Yeah, yes, you were very, we all noticed how you noticing it and were impressed. So Season 2 does a lot right for a second season of a very narrative-based show. It has some really cool stuff. It explores. It's bigger. It's kind of stumbles early on, pacing-wise, and then it starts to get its footing, and then it takes off, and then it totally falls and then picks back up for the last two episodes. But yeah, I still stand by what I said. Like, it was what I wanted. It just was never going to live up to season one, because season one was so tight and so narratively well-paced, you know. But the standout star of season two is Will. Because that actor...
Yeah.
Fucking... You had no, we had no idea if he could act or not. I mean, his direction in season one was, be scared, be gone, lie dying.
Yeah.
That was his arc. I mean, that was it.
But yeah.
Jam a tube down there.
And they just... They put him through the ringer... I mean, the actor, not the character.
Dude, the scene, I mean, the exorcism scenes are always impressive, right, when they're done well. But that wasn't the most impressive scene to me was he was tied to the chair. And, like, half of his face was possessed and the other half wasn't. And so he had this thing going, and I read about an article, so I was looking for it, and they were absolutely right. It's like, part of him was, like, smiling as they were making him remember stuff, and the other side was, like, kind of curling and tightening. Really cool, the shit he did. It was, you know, some of it's very mechanical and probably had heavily directed, but I thought he did a great job acting-wise. So that was a pleasant surprise. I was like, oh, good. The other one, who's now been upgraded to a full-time series regular because he wasn't in the first one,
actually
is a good actor. So good, he belongs with the rest of the group.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Whereas Mike had very little to do.
He didn't really come into his own until, like, the last two episodes.
I mean, he technically, if you really want to get into it, he did... put a couple of things together that helped save people.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, it was just like...
In the last couple of episodes.
Yeah.
He doesn't do anything until the last couple
but of episodes. But even then, it's like, it's only like maybe like a minute of him doing something. Yeah.
He like does a Goonies thing and then, yeah. No, you're absolutely right. No, everyone else had stronger arcs than him. He just, I guess they couldn't fix that when they were going through it. They fixed the Dustin and Steve issue.
Yeah.
Jonathan and Nancy did exactly what I wanted them to do, you know?
Yeah.
You want them together, unless you're my wife, who is Team Steve.
A lot of people are Team Steve now.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like Jonathan just needed some good luck. Something good to happen to him.
I'm not worried about Steve, though. I think Steve will be...
Steve's going to be fine. Steve's going to be fine. Steve's becoming a cooler, better person, so that's exciting, too. Because he's been knocked off the social, you know, king spot by Billy. Okay, let's talk about episode 7. Because it is the thing. I love that 36 hours after that shit airs, there's already multiple articles devoted to how the season fucked up because of episode 7. And I'm like, God damn it, Internet, you are fucking on top of this. Because I just watched it and fuck, what was that? So they set up Kali number 8 in the first scene of the first episode of season 2.
Yeah.
Intriguing.
Yeah.
None of those cardboard cutout motherfucking characters are on screen long enough to be as two-dimensional as they turn out to be.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, all right, that was interesting. Oh, we're okay, we'll hopefully go back to it.
Yeah.
And then I wish to God they had.
Yeah. So, yeah, when you see the characters, it's like, what god-awful comic book slash movie poster from the 80s that they
got it from a book. It's the Decay of Modern Society or whatever. It's like the go-to. Everyone in Hollywood in the 80s went to this one book to get the different punk stereotypes. And it's like they dipped at the same well that they had dipped at 30 years ago. And it did not work.
It really took you out. It took you out
really,
of
really in a way that did not work.
Of the reality
didn't fit the series
of
at all.
The world of the show, because it was all of Chicago was just so comic book.
Mm. It felt like like Tim Burton Batman.
Yeah,
maybe even no. It actually, felt like what was it? Erica said Flatliners.
Oh,
felt like Schumacher Batman.
Yeah, it was bad. The characters were, they were like bad comic book characters.
Yeah, very, very two-dimensional.
And I didn't even know what the fuck the point of this group was. They were like...
Getting revenge.
Sort of getting revenge.
For Kali, but they had no
reason. But they were just sort of stealing and... I mean, I got the notion that at least half of them were just there to grab money, and Kali was there to get some sort of revenge. Weird, stupid, righteous,
right,
personal revenge. It was just dumb.
It felt so undeveloped compared to everything else on that show.
Yeah.
And also, when you look at it from the, what is the point of this episode? What was the point of that episode? Elle goes and gets this weird training scene that really...
With the train?
She trains with a train, yes. For the 1,000th fucking time. You are the smartest comedian ever.
No, I didn't even, I wasn't even the one to put that together. I think it was one of the, that was either Mel or okay. Erica. That was one of the women's.
Oh, then they're definitely smarter than
that. They are. They are.
But, I mean, we already knew that when Elle gets upset, she can focus more. Like, that wasn't like a huge revelation. And honestly, all I could think was, I really think the payoff to this is going to be, we're going to find out later that when she feels good emotions, she's stronger. I feel like you're gonna do the Jedi thing at the end.
Well, maybe.
You know, like, oh, love is, it's the Monsters, Inc. You ever see Monsters, Inc.?
No.
They scare children because they capture the screams, the scream, you know, but then,
don't tell me, because I'm gonna see it someday.
This fucking thing's been out for like 12 years, dude. No, fuck you. Hey, guess what? And the Sixth Sense, Bruce Willis is dead.
Damn it.
Okay, let me just really quick rant about what I hated the most about episode 7, which wasn't anything in the episode. Mm-hmm. It was where it fell in the season.
And I agree with you on this.
So,
but maybe just, for a different reason.
Maybe for different reasons. So, episode 6 ends with the Demodog putting its claw on the edge of the opening.
Yes.
You're like, it's that oh shit moment. It's, you know, when that's all the bad stuff from aliens is about to go down.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then cut to this random episode, right? That just utterly destroys the pace.
Yeah.
That's big problem number one. The show didn't have the tightest pace to begin with. So mm-hmm. when they finally found it, I was like, it really felt like deflating my balloon.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't need to do that. And there was a better way to do it with very minimal rejiggering mm-hmm. of events. All they had to do was get what happened in episode 7 to happen in episode 6 and switch them. And the reason I say that and really firmly believe this is there's a very strong narrative thing they didn't take advantage of. Elle checks in on her friends mm-hmm. while she's in Chicago. And she has a vision, and it almost seems like this was the intention. She has a vision of only her friend's side of what's happening.
Yes.
And we see Hopper very frightened in some kind of control room, but we don't even know what's going on. We can't mm-hmm. see what's happening around him.
Yeah.
We see Mike being held by some force. We don't know why, but he's screaming and shouting and trying to get away. And you have no context. As the audience, that's really fucking disturbing. And like,
yeah.
Like the tension is huge.
It would have been.
It would have been if you didn't already see that from their point of view.
Right.
So imagine if episode 6 is Elle goes to Chicago, has this stupid experience with stupid characters, has this moment, and then the audience is like, oh shit, something really bad is happening in Indiana. What is it? Or mm-hmm. in Hawkins. And then you get to see it. And then and then not only that, but you get that smart audience moment where you're like, that's the thing that Elle saw.
Right.
But it's slightly different because, you know, which is always a great payoff. It's an improv thing. That would have done so much to fix the pacing of the season.
I agree with that. And I'll also add that one of the reasons that I think those two should have been reversed is because I think the emotional impact of her meeting her mother was much stronger than her meeting Kali.
Right, so it should have built.
Yeah, it should have gone from Kali to her mother.
Right, and that's what I meant by the rejiggering. There would be a fairly minimal way of having to rewrite that. And, you know, you think of this foundationally. This is how they wrote the season.
Yeah, sure.
But also, Eric and I were talking about this. There's nothing about, or maybe it was you, something about the mom. Like, there's no real reason in that scene that she would go to find Kali.
Not that we could...
There was nothing clearly evident in the way that it was filmed to say, like, oh, she clearly wants you to find your sister.
Yeah.
So they could have fucking done anything. I mean, Elle could have just remembered that she had seen her. Like, something could trigger and then be like, oh, I should go check in. Like, anything else would have worked better. You're absolutely right. The mom thing was a big payoff. That was a huge moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it was wasted.
Yeah.
And then also the demo dog hand up, and then immediately afterwards you get to pick up there. That I would have liked.
What would have been a perfect way to handle the end of meeting her mom is after the whole thing, and what her mom wanted to show her was that Brenner was still alive.
Right. Because Kali doing it,
it
was forced, and how would she know?
Well, because the guy told them.
Oh, right, that's right. Okay. Yeah.
Which is still kind of a dumb. and people are still like, is he really still alive?
Because didn't you make the point after season one that the horror movie rules stipulate if you don't see the bad guy die, then he's still alive?
Yeah.
I mean, I always knew Brenner was still alive, but
yeah, it seems like a good bet that he's still alive.
Right. I mean,
but it was kind of a weak way to reveal it.
Yes, especially the second reveal. What they did it twice. It's like, all right, the guy said it, and then she does the... Yeah, you're absolutely right. It could have been done so much better.
But yeah, if she'd done the Kali bit, then come back, find her mom. Mom goes through the whole thing again. And which at the end of that...
heartbreaking, by the way.
Yeah, it is.
Fucking heartbreaking.
And at the end of that, manages to get enough out there to say, and by the way, Brenner's alive.
Yeah. Way more than her saying no, or like the one thing she does to break her routine in the in-between place and Mel's or Elle's mind.
Yeah.
So much weight. Like that little pocket of the season just felt so weak and wrong compared to everything else. Yeah. And I don't buy the backdoor pilot. A lot of people are saying, oh, it's bad because it was a backdoor pilot. I think it was just setting up season three.
Yeah.
And it was just done badly because it was... sole purpose was to set up the next
I season. Hope it's not. I really fucking hope it's not because I do not want those characters to be a
no
crucial
one
part of
here's,
season
here's
three.
The thing. We get to be righteously indignant. No, here's the great thing about this. I thought about this. We can be righteously indignant because the reaction to that episode is so bad.
Yeah.
They will never make a spinoff series. So if they were trying to do a backdoor pilot, I can say with 100% accuracy that it's not going to work. So therefore, it must have been setting up season three, and they're not going to argue with me. Because they'll be like, oh, yeah, no, season three. Yeah, no, we weren't trying to launch all these new shitty characters.
But I don't want those characters in season three. Maybe Kali, but better not be a main part of it.
Oh. Yeah. They just die. They die in the first episode. They get wiped out. Brenner's got superpowers. Love the snowball at the end. Give us a payoff. All controversy aside, I wanted to see those two little kids kiss. Call me weird. I just really wanted Mike and Elle to kiss. I was all tickled that it happened. The flip thing was a little weird.
The flip thing.
That pans out of the snowball. It flips upside down. You're in the upside down. You see the decayed upside down version of the school dance from the outside. And then the mind flayer is standing over it.
Yeah, I really get what the point of that is.
Yeah.
I understand.
The Duffer said they wanted this more nebulous, like the mind flayer is aware of 11 thing. But like, yeah, no shit. It tried to take over her. It clearly wants her. That does not in any way inform anything. The gate's closed. So something else is going to have to happen. Like being like, oh, the bad guy's still out there. It's like, no shit, dude.
I'm still a little the whole rules of the upside down and the gate and anything crossing over is still a little fuzzy to me.
Well, why could the
after that last scene?
Why could the Demogorgon open them, but no one else can? For one thing, is that because Elle touched it? Like that's a little weird. And then why didn't the Mind Flayer just come in? The hole was huge.
Yeah.
Like, the hole was so big. Why the gate was so big? Why didn't it just... Like, yeah, there's definitely some... Don't look too...
I mean, close. I took it as it couldn't really manifest physically outside.
I guess, but...
And that's why I had to use Will.
Right. But the Demodogs could, and it could poison the... Was it because the air is... It's like the Invaders from Mars thing, where, like, the air has to be poisoned for it to do it?
Maybe.
Whatever. Probably not worth spending my mental cycles on.
No. Nope.
Nope. So, yeah, I enjoyed season two. I have no regrets binging on it. It really did fulfill what I needed it to fulfill.
Mm-hmm.
I hope season three is a little smarter with how they pace things and, you know, keep the characters less apart.
Yeah.
Is my hope.
Well, hope it's not. Okay, we have to get rid of Elle again for 5 episodes.
They do. I'm dropping the hammer on this show. I'm writing a very angry letter.
No. Maybe they'll just have her lose her powers.
Right. Yeah. Of course. When she's happy, she doesn't have her powers. Oh, no. Elle, get mad. Mike just starts slapping her. Hopper's just like throwing her out. Like, no, Elle, get angry. Make the windows burst again. Make your nose. I'll make your nose bleed, Elle.
quick bit while you're talking about Hopper, I think he had some great scenes.
Yeah,
his phone call scene, and I'm glad they had Elle actually get to hear that.
Yeah, that would have been really frustrating if he was just putting it out there. You mean on the radio?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. That was really nice. I like the way they did the fight, and on the one hand, they made it seem like super dramatic and terrible, but on the other hand, I'm watching like this. This seems like very typical
father, daughter.
Yeah. Especially like single father and daughter.
Yep.
This seems like pretty normal sort of an argument fight thing.
Yeah.
But taken to, you know, the nth degree because of her powers.
And him losing a daughter. Like that, I kept seeing that informing a lot of what he was doing. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a traumatic event, so it should inform what he's doing.
I thought it was a good scene. I appreciated it.
I didn't even mention David Harbour because, like, him and Winona Ryder, they do their characters very well.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's much to say about it because the characters don't actually change a lot.
Well... especially really took it home in what was that season or episode 8 when they were actually getting the
episode 9, man. That's when she's burning the demon out of him.
Yeah,
she got her moment finally because otherwise she's just like a frazzled single mom a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. But David Harbour is just like the grizzled, you know, sheriff. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time he showed some tenderness with Elle, don't get me wrong.
Oh yeah,
but yeah, I didn't even bring them up because it's just like, yeah, they did really well. Shows about the kids. Mm-hmm. You know, it really comes down to the kids. So, yeah, I mean, if you listen to all this, then you either agree or disagree. You've seen it already, so I don't know what else to say about it. Anything else you want to mention?
Oh, man. I think I'm spent.
Yeah, I'm exhausted. I got bushwhacked by the holidays, man. There's a lot of booze in that. Well, we are Buddies in Space. You are.
That's Michael Smith, and you are.
And Michael Carassi. Take it home, Melanie.
Buddies in Space is a Stolen Dress Entertainment production. Visit stolendress.com to check out other Stolen Dress podcasts, blogs, tweets, videos, and books.
And now we just have to wait for the next season of the OA.
I know.
I'm psyched. That should be coming up pretty soon, right?
Yeah, December. Because they haven't actually announced it, but they didn't really announce the first season either.
Yeah.
That's Netflix. They're sneaky. The rest of the Tick's supposed to be coming out in February.
Oh, good. I think that was a good decision for them to break up the season and not release it all at once.
Well, it differentiates them from Netflix, mm-hmm. You know, because Netflix is you get the binge on the whole thing, and then Amazon has you don't have to wait for every episode,
but right.
You got to wait in chunks. And it let, you know, it let whoever the bad guy's name is, his name escaped me. What's his name?
The Terror.
It gave the Terror that really funny,
too long.
Two-word ending to that little part of the season. The suit really did change.
Oh, yeah.
We went back and watched, and we were like, that's a really... I'm glad they call it out in the show, because the Tick really looked different between the first, the pilot, and the next episode.
And much better.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Still weird.